You're probably concerned about your physical health these days, but what about your mental health? Hi, I'm Jill Najow. Thanks for joining us on the Ideas Network today. Back with us is Shyla Morgain. She is a distinguished psychologist in the Department of Orthopedics and Rehabilitation at the University of Wisconsin-Madison School of Medicine and Public Health. She's a speaker, writer, facilitator, and therapist. So what do you want to know about making the most of being at home? Are you having problems? Well, we'd like to hear from you. So give us a call. The number, 800-642-1234. Or you can always send an email to ideas@wpr.org. Shyla, hi.
Hi, Jill. Thank you so much for having me on the show today.
Well, thank you for coming. Thank you for being with us, since you're not in the studio, obviously. So Wisconsin is sort of opening up now, but you know, lots of people are really staying home, and it's been 2 months and counting. What are some of the psychological challenges that we're all facing?
It's such a great question, Jill. As the pandemic continues and reopening starts to begin, there's a lot of uncertainty. And I really want to encourage people to develop their emotional protective equipment during this pandemic, because many people are finding that as the pandemic continues, people are feeling stressed out. They're feeling uncertain and can really be struggling with continued social isolation that takes a toll on our body and our mind and our spirit.
Well, we all have heard of cabin fever. Since we live in Wisconsin, we tend to get that in the wintertime. But what? Tell us about cabin fever and how that relates to what we're going through right now.
Sure. Cabin fever happens when we're stuck inside for too long. You think about a hurricane or a blizzard here in Wisconsin where we're cooped up for a few days and you start to feel stir crazy. And we're finding with that pandemic, with safer at home and social distancing, that people are feeling some of those same feelings. They can start to feel increasingly isolated and cut off from the outside world. A friend of mine, I was on a call with her yesterday, and she said she has social plans this weekend. She's going to be sitting on somebody's outside deck for an hour chatting from 6 to 10 feet apart. And she was so excited because that was the first social interaction she had. And I think people can appreciate that.
Sure.
That we can, after over time, this notion of disconnection can leave us feeling kind of a malaise, like we can feel a little lethargic or foggy or unmotivated or bored. And people can also experience other symptoms like sleep disturbance or difficulty focusing or concentration, sense of agitation, which, you know, we're not meant as a species to live for a prolonged period of time out of connection with one another. So when I think about that notion of emotional protective equipment, one of the first strategies is to really stay connected. You know, we want to think about, who do I want to connect with? Who should I be reaching out to check in about? And that may be a human, it may be a pet, or even just connecting with nature, getting outside. Gardening can be a real quite therapeutic, to get in the earth, digging up weeds or planting plants. One of the things I've been struck with is going around town, there are so many garden centers open and people are planting vegetables for the first time. I personally bought tomato plants yesterday, the first time in my life, and it felt good. So if we can't connect with, you know, with a human, you know, think about even bringing a plant into your home to, you know, help you feel part of the environment and to create a little bit of a sense of normal.
Yes, we've certainly been hearing that from people, especially on our Garden Talk show on Fridays and Saturday morning. But people are just want to get outside. They want to do something special. And I've noticed myself that when it's been gloomy out, like it is today and yesterday, it's much more, you feel much worse than when it was sunny like this weekend. Is that normal for most people?
Very true. Yeah, I've been hearing that the last couple of days we're ready for warmer weather where we can get out and feel the warmth of the sunshine. And, you know, you think about how the warmth and the sun allows new growth with plant life. It's almost like overnight the daffodils are up and blooming. In the same way, I think it can be a balm for the weariness that we're all feeling and can allow some vitality to grow and enthusiasm. And if we, you know, we can't, when I think about cabin fever and getting disconnected, we're missing out on some of those boosts to our mood that happen when we just have random encounters in our day. Like if you're in the office chit-chatting with a coworker, or maybe you run into somebody you know in the grocery store, or even just talking with the clerk, all those small interactions boost our mood. And we're missing out on that, again, causing us to feel a little more down and even potentially depressed. So the antidote, when I think of a second emotional protective equipment that we want to have on board, that is a way we can have a similar boost, is just to create something. Have a goal you're working towards. Create something. I think that's why we're seeing people baking, and grocery stores are out of yeast probably for the first time ever.
Yes.
You know, and you could create a garden. You could do some arts and crafts. There are many people are doing puzzles. Again, that sense of creativity really engages the brain, and mm-hmm. it helps us focus on what we can control, and that can also help with improving our mood.
And just people who are making masks. I've noticed that on social media, people are saying, oh, I made so many masks today that I've never seen them post anything about doing anything creative. But that is another way to release some of that.
Yes, wonderful. And thank you to all the listeners who have been creating masks, and you may just be saving a life there. Another framework I'd like to introduce is this concept of temporal distancing, which is quite simply thinking of yourself a year or two from now. And what would that future self tell you currently about how you can best navigate this time? What would help you feel a bit like a hero or heroine during this time? What would help you feel like you made a difference, you were of service, you did help somebody in need? And again, that kind of orientation can really help you know what is your next step to take in your own path, and we can all make a difference. And again, when we take regular action in the direction of things that we value or make a difference, that can really feel much more enlivening than just focusing on the doom and gloom of COVID-19.
Right. We're talking to Shyla Morgain about things that can help you cope with being isolated from others. What have you been doing with your time at home to help you get through this period? We'd like to hear from you. So give us a call, 800-642-1234. And of course, you can always send an email to ideas@wpr.org. Lines are open. Give us a call. So, Shyla, you had sent me some things to look at before we did this interview today. And one of them was something that you call allostatic load. I'd never heard that before. What is that?
Yeah, Jill, it's fascinating. You know, and it really resonated to me. A few weeks ago, I was trying to craft a work email, and I just wasn't thinking very clearly, and I felt tired, and it felt like a burden. When I think back to 2 months ago in the office, I could just shoot off that email in an instant. And then I came across this term, allostatic load, and I thought, that's what I'm experiencing, that I'm sure many other listeners can relate to. Allostatic load refers to the accumulation of stress on our system. We're designed as a species to deal with stress. Back in caveman, cavewoman times, we could deal with that saber-toothed tiger jumping out at us. The saber-toothed tiger, maybe we'd fight it or flee, mm-hmm. And then the saber-toothed tiger would go away, and our system could then re-regulate and go back to a place of calm. During COVID-19, we are bombarded with stress. There's not really a relief from it. And simple things like going to the grocery store can feel quite frightening. Passing somebody on the street that's getting a little too close, who's not wearing a mask, can really rev up that stress system. So a real takeaway is when we have that accumulation of stress, which is referred to as allostatic load, it really implies this wear and tear on our mind and body, causing us to feel quite fatigued and worn down. So in a sense, our bodies aren't working very hard, but our mind is having to work really hard on overtime. Just thinking about navigating the grocery store, how hard your mind has to work. Because everything looks different, this accumulation can cause us to feel lower motivation or having trouble doing simple tasks. So I think there are two, when we go back to that emotional protective equipment, I think the first thing is to recognize this is hard. Like, yes. We weren't designed to live this way. This is tough. You're not alone in feeling this, and giving yourself some grace. And I'd like to talk a little bit, you know, maybe even later, around self-compassion and kindness. So that's the first thing. The second is that old stress response of fight or flight, that instinct we have, that sympathetic nervous system, doesn't work with COVID-19.
No.
We're back with the saber-toothed tiger with our ancestors. But we can't fight COVID-19 and we can't flee from it. So instead, we have another natural stress response, which is called the befriend and tend response, the tend and befriend response. And this helps us stay more stress resilient and can actually lower that allostatic load or make us feel more manageable. So that tend and befriend response, quite simply, is tending to ourselves, doing some self-care, thinking about what is one self-care activity I can do. Maybe it's eating well, moving my body, getting good sleep, watching something enjoyable. And the befriend is quite simply reaching out to somebody else, doing a little random act of kindness, offering somebody some words of encouragement. When we engage that part of our central nervous system, that really helps lower the amount of stress in our system so we can function more effectively.
And I think a lot of people are kind of hard on themselves, aren't they? Why can't I be more productive? Here I am at home all this time and my closet still isn't cleaned out, or I'm just not putting in as many hours if I'm working from home as I thought I should. What are some good ways to deal with that, and kind of like this self, like you said, you're not being a friend to yourself?
Yeah, thank you, Jill. That's such a great point. Now, it's always good to have goals. I call them Corona goals, and maybe something you want to work towards or develop or learn or experience. I can really resonate to the closet cleaning. That was my initial Corona goal. I'm going to clean the whole house.
Sure.
Finally, this last weekend, I cleaned out 3 closets, and I probably have 5 to go. So it's slow progress here in the 2 months. So, yeah, to cut yourself a break, be easy on yourself. You know, if you haven't learned a foreign language or become a virtuoso in piano or built a whole new bookcase, you know, often we're just trying to get through the day and create some good structures. So self-compassion can really be a lifeline during this time. I think another essential component of the emotional protective equipment, that really having a brief practice of offering yourself some kindness. I like to teach people a self-compassion practice and a mindfulness practice that can be quite helpful. The self-compassion practice I call taking a self-compassion break, based on the work of Kristen Neff and Christopher Germer, some of the main researchers and teachers in self-compassion. But it's quite simply, if we think about taking a self-compassion break, you can imagine you're struggling or feeling overwhelmed. You could just pause. You could take a couple of deep breaths. Recognize with mindfulness that this is a tough moment, but also recognize the common humanity. Everyone on the planet has been impacted by this. We're not alone. And then the last thing is just to offer some kindness to yourself. You could do that by touch, putting a hand on your heart, or maybe giving yourself a little hug. And then just saying some words of kindness, like, this is tough, but I'll get through this. Or, I've gotten through tough times before, I'll get through this again. Or even imagining some words of kindness offered to you from somebody you care about. That kind of practice can really help you stay resilient and can be quite grounding to get yourself back in the moment. And it really also helps establish a sense of safety, that, you know, our mind can get into doom and gloom thinking. They think about anticipatory grief, you know, that we're grieving potential scenarios in the future and kind of revving our system up with a lot of stress. Instead, this kind of self-compassion break can really help us be here now in the moment.
Okay.
And the second practice, Jill, is just a brief mindfulness practice using your 5 senses. Again, you can, you know, in the moment you're feeling anxious, overwhelmed, maybe you're ruminating about losses or afraid of the future. You could stop and just using your 5 senses, noticing 5 things you can see. You might name them out loud, silently, or actually out loud. 4 things you can hear, 3 things you can touch, 2 things you can smell, and 1 thing that you can taste. That 5 senses practice, again, brings you in the moment and allows you to cultivate some peace in the storm around us.
Yes, and thank you for reminding us of that. I've actually done that five senses thing myself. It really, really does help. And if I can't feel three things, I will try to remember what velvet feels like. So you're engaging that also. We're talking with Shaila Morgane. What are you doing to fight cabin fever? How has staying at home affected your mental health? Please join the conversation by calling 800-642-1234, or you can send an email to ideas@wpr.org. This is the Larry Mueller Show. I'm Jill Nadeau. After 11:45 today, we're going to learn more about tracing our family history. That's coming up next on the Ideas Network. But right now, we are talking to Shaila Morgane about some ways to cope with feeling isolated. Another thing that I've heard a lot of people say, Shaila, is that they're grieving. They're grieving for the life that they used to have, or maybe for not being with people. Is that something that you're hearing also?
Absolutely. We are going through collective grief, knowing that we're not returning to normal anytime soon. And we can go through those stages of grieving. You know, there's first the denial. Probably we all appreciate that. Right when this hit our state or the U.S., we thought, oh, maybe it's just like a cold. It'll pass. We'll get through this quickly. Then there's a notion of bargaining. That's the second stage of grief, where we are thinking, if I do everything perfectly, if my community does safer at home for a period of time, this will all go away, which, you know, it hasn't. And then there can be anger and sadness, the third and fourth stage, all of which leads to the fifth stage, which is acceptance. There's an author, David Kessler, who wrote a book and studied with the main researcher, Elizabeth Kubler-Ross, around grief, and they co-wrote many books. But his latest book is actually on the sixth stage of grief, which is meaning-making. And he says that one of the ways that we can navigate the stages and get to that place of acceptance is to create some meaning during this time. I mentioned earlier that anticipatory grief, I think we're grieving not only the losses that, you know, for example, when you mentioned feeling velvet just before break, I thought, gosh, you know, there, you know, you can imagine the touch of velvet, but you can also, you know, imagine all the things we took for granted. Like I hear people say, man, that last meal I had out, I should have ordered dessert.
I heard that.
I wish I had.
Yes.
You know, I should have ordered the most calorie-laden dessert and really savored it. So those losses, you know. But then we're having this anticipatory grief around. It's probably the first time in our lifetime we don't know what the future holds. There's uncertainty of what even 4th of July will look like. And as a result, our mind can go into the future and imagine the worst. I think another thing that's been really hard for many people is the lack of touch, especially if you're single and live alone. It may be the longest you've gone without any physical touch, whether it's just a hug or somebody putting their hand on your arm. And as humans, we need that tactile way of connecting. So, you know, just acknowledgement that this is really profound, what we're going through. And we will get through this. We are resilient as a species. We've gotten through tremendous things, you know, over the course of humanity. Mm-hmm. This will end. It may not feel like it, but it will. And again, if we go back to meaning making, you mentioned people making masks. You know, if we can focus again on one thing we can do to make meaning, to make a difference, and especially to grow. One of the things I'm fascinated by is this concept of fire-activated seeds. Those are seeds that only get activated when they are, when like molten lava or fire goes by, that it melts the resin core so that the inner seed can activate and then it comes to life. And I think times like this really can activate latent qualities that have been on the back burner, and bring them forward and online so we can grow. So if we can, you know, get out of that fear state and even past the learning state into a growth mindset, thinking about, okay, we can't get out of this. How do we get into this? And what is some capacity within me that I can strengthen? We're going to do much better and stay resilient. And I think those things are kind of like northern stars like our North Star to guide us during these dark nights of the soul.
Oh, I like that. Very visual. Let's go to the phones, Shaila. We've got a couple of people.
Love to.
Yeah, let's talk. Let's talk to Martha in Menominee and see what she's been doing. Hi, Martha.
Hi there. Say, I have a great idea. We just struck upon this with all the anxiety and cabin fever. We struck up a plan to control the future, and that is every weekend for the past like 5-6 weeks, we throw a dart at a map of Western Wisconsin, and then we plan a picnic day. And so the only rule is it has to be a town or a county or somewhere we've never been before, because we're on a discovery mission. So over the past 5 weeks, we've been to Little Falls and Balsam Lake and Jim Falls. We've learned about the history of all these areas in Western Wisconsin. We've been to Porcupine and Pepin. We have been all over Western Wisconsin discovering all these charming little towns, making a picnic lunch, and it's given us something to look forward to, something we know we're going to do, and we're in control. We take a picnic lunch, we take our guitars, and we just have a great day. Luckily, the weather's held out for us.
Wow, that is a great idea. What do you think, Shaila?
Oh, Martha, it just brought the biggest smile to my face.
Too.
When you said that, I love it. Throwing the dart, seeing where it lands. To me, you're really embodying an adventure mindset, right? We can get through this time, the doom and gloom, or we can put on our adventure cap and superhero cape and set out to an unknown destination, which you have. And I think you really raise an important point. There's a lot we can't control, right? We can't control what other people are going to do. We can't control when the virus is going to end and we get the vaccine. But we can control what we do with our day. And it's so much more enlivening to move in the direction of those things you're wanting, those new adventures, those new experiences. It can be quite deadening just to try to avoid what you don't want to have happen. So I think you gave a great idea for a lot of listeners. And I think that would be something really fun for other people to try.
Definitely. Thank you so much for sharing that with us, Martha. Next, let's go to Christine, and she's in Oconomowoc. Hi, Christine.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure. What have you been up to?
Well, I have a lot of friends and family members who are homeschooling, and they're getting burned out and trying to think of things to do for the small children. And I have started bringing them to my home, safe distance, of course, masked, and teaching them how to plant and what makes plants grow, that they need sun and water and fertilizer, which we call horse poop. And they were amazed that the horse poop does not smell like poop. And then I send them home with pots with bean seeds or radishes and let them watch them grow. And it gets them out of their normal homeschooling with math and whatever they're doing and teaching them what to do to A, save the planet, and B, grow their own food.
Oh, wonderful. And a lifelong skill. Thank you, Christine. Shaila, there again, there's a hero.
Yeah, absolutely. Christine, that's wonderful. Oh, my goodness. And you're a hero. And I think our children are some of the unsung heroes of this pandemic, having to transition from schooling to homeschooling while their parents are working from home and navigate online learning. So, you know, and I just love what you're doing, because it's really teaching them practical life skills that sometimes gets missed in education. And, you know, if you can provide some of that experiential learning where they're tangible, concrete skill like growing something, you know, that's probably going to be one of their highlights from this time, and that will be a lifelong memory for them. So I think a great idea for families as well to involve kids in some of those skills that, as you said, help save the planet. And really, you know, the future lies in the hands of our youth. So anything we can do to support a young person is great. And, you know, it doesn't have to necessarily be your own children, just reaching out to your neighborhood children. I've been sending my friends' kids kites recently, saying, hey, you know, remember to keep flying And, you know, anything we can do, I think, to support a child right now is good work.
Yes, and I'm sure that the child's caregivers are probably appreciating that a lot, because I know that it's not easy to become a teacher. I think everybody's been saying teachers are not paid enough, which we've known, but it's difficult. And then a lot of times they're working from home also. So what advice do you have for those parents or caregivers who are feeling a little down on themselves because they aren't doing everything perfectly?
Oh, that's such a great point, Jill. And yeah, just acknowledging, you know, you didn't go to school to be a teacher and a principal and have your spouse as your coworker in the home while trying to do Zoom calls and get projects done for work.
Yes.
It's a juggling act. And I think to just be easy on yourself. Some days are going to go better than others. Sometimes you might have to put your child in front of a screen for longer than you want to get some stuff done, and to enlist some help. Often you can enlist family members, you know, having, even if it's virtual, doing some childcare, enlisting a neighbor to maybe watch them outside, and having some structured projects for them can also help. Also, I see a lot of kids, because they do have more time, connecting more with cousins virtually or friends
sure.
virtually, just to help them with their own isolation. And I think, you know, each day trying to do the best you can. I would also encourage talking with your boss to see if there can be some a change in your workflow, like maybe you work later into the evening so you can be around in the morning with your kids. Or maybe you and your spouse have to tag team, or your partner if you have one, you know, taking chunks where you're watching a child or and then going into doing your work to make it flow a little bit better. But yeah, we weren't anticipating this, nor do we necessarily feel like we're well equipped to teach geometry or algebra or English essays or things like that. So it is hard. And maybe also just reaching out to other parents for ideas.
Yes.
Knowing
yes.
you don't have to go it alone.
Yeah. And there's plenty of resources, too. I mean, I know Wisconsin PBS has been putting things out there for parents, local libraries, pretty much any museum. So there are things that can offer a little respite from your duties as teacher. And speaking of those kids now, and with us generally, you kind of alluded to this a little earlier about, you know, what doesn't kill you makes you stronger kind of a thing. But is this going to be influential, you think, for children who are growing up during this time? Is this going to influence how they think about things for the rest of their life?
Absolutely. You know, it's hard not to imagine that it would have a lasting impact, but I actually think it's going to have a powerful and profound impact, because this pandemic is really distilling for us what it means to be human. You know, we're at a point in our life where it was faster, quicker, more technology, that we were kind of speeding ahead, that I think we got disconnected with some of the core basics of life. And so I think a lot of our young people that I've been talking with really feel impassioned to make a difference. They feel even more dedicated to learning and growing, recognizing that they can really help the planet or the community. And I think for kids, you know, who even 6 months ago were spending so much time behind the screens, are really also now recognizing, gosh, there's value to in-person connection.
Right.
That just by, you know, chatting or by tweeting or Snapchatting, that there's something that was missed.
Mm-hmm.
I know I used to say that the primary language for youth is texting or those screen messages. So I think it's also helping clarify for them some of the things that our maybe grandparents knew, that there's pleasure in baking a fresh loaf of bread or digging in the dirt or chatting over a cup of tea with somebody. That's really the beauty of being human. And
yeah.
So I think that way of connecting and kindness and caring for one another, you know, that's the one thing that the virus hasn't touched, is our innate capacity for caring and kindness and connection. And I think that's really imprinted on our young people. So So that's, for me, the hope for the future.
Definitely. Thank you. We do have another call. Nancy in Grafton has something for us. Hi, Nancy.
Hello. I have a couple of families that are right in my neighborhood. They have little ones, little children. And you know what? Those neat little kids, they come over and they draw pictures of chalk all over my driveway, the sidewalk and everything. A whole bunch of them, and they're having a good time, and so am I. And another thing is, our church is open like from 7 in the morning till 8 at night. Anybody can come in and just be quiet and do whatever. And a lot of times I go over there and there's not a soul in there except me. Well, I have a concert and I'm the soloist. And I sing whatever, you know, all those hymns. Well, now they took all the books out of church, so heck, I got some other little books. I can take them over, you know. And I'll sing hymns, no hers, really only hymns. But anyhow, I have a concert. And somebody comes in and I shut up. But it's a good thing. Oh. Makes me feel good, and I think God didn't shut me up yet.
Well, maybe you should keep singing when people come in, Nancy.
And then I shut up. Although some young gal came in one day, and I know her, and I said, "Oh, I can't, you know, I didn't sing anymore." And I said, "Yeah, I was singing. Oh, I love to sing." So she was a few feet away from me, and then we had a duet. And we sang about half an hour. We were singing. And so that's the way it goes. You've got to do what makes you feel good, too.
Yeah, exactly. Well, thank you for sharing that with us, Nancy. Shiloh, what do you have to say about that?
Nancy, it warmed my heart hearing about your singing in church. I bet it's just beautiful. You know, in the sidewalk, chalk art is... that can really uplift the whole neighborhood. My neighbor does that. She wrote something on my driveway, and it just made my day and inspired me so much. I was in search of chalk that was actually hard to find for a while, because
yes,
I think everyone can find sidewalk chalk. But, you know, that kind of thing that you can do in your neighborhood, whether it's doing some art on the sidewalk, or many people are putting art in their windows, so people walking past, or... there was a community that put teddy bears in their windows, and then they're organizing neighborhood walks for the kids so they can go house to house and see what's in the window. Again, that allows us to turn towards one another and recognize that we live in community. And I really see neighbors helping neighbors. Maybe a younger neighbor might go out and get groceries for an elderly neighbor, or something breaks and need, you know, neighbors helping fix it, or maybe another neighbor's mowing the lawn. And I think we, again, when we think about an emotional protective equipment, we do better when we have that support. Research shows if an animal's stressed and it's on its own, there's a real spike in cortisol. But if that animal is surrounded by a familiar companion, that spike in cortisol doesn't happen. In the same way, if we're isolated and alone, stress happens, we can really feel that rise in stress response, versus if we're in connection with a friend, family member, neighbor, we, again, don't have that increase in cortisol in our system as much. So that's the first thing. And the second, the singing in church, again, that's such a beautiful image. So I think also, depending on your faith or religious orientation, just staying connected in that way to whatever your vision is of God, or to something larger than yourself, you know, even just connecting to the history of humanity across time and all the innovation and adaptation we've had to make as a species, I think that's really important. And the singing, again, goes back to using your voice, using that self-expression, creating. One of the best things we can do to boost our mood and help us really alchemize the stress and strife into creating something of beauty that we're offering the world. Yeah, really well done, Nancy. And Jill and I sure wish we could sneak into that church and hear you sing.
That's right. Absolutely.
Make my day for sure.
Yeah, for sure. Well, we've got a couple minutes left here, and we'll probably talk about this a little bit more next time you're with us. But, you know, we're going to be staying at home for months. We've been here for months, and it's probably going to be more. What advice do you have when it comes time to kind of make that transition to a more normal world?
That is great. There has been research out of studies done when people came out of quarantine with SARS of some of the psychological impacts, and that sense of being on guard and anxious when you're around other people. People can probably relate to this if you're watching TV and you see crowds like in a football during a football game or even on a TV show, people high-fiving or hugging or sharing a meal with the same fork, you have a visceral reaction, kind of a queasiness.
Yeah.
So I think it'll take a little bit to reestablish some of our new, you know, going back to some of those old normals where we can feel relaxed. But I think, you know, the biggest thing when we think about right now is, you know, I just to leave with maybe five things you can do, which are number one, making sure that you are engaging in self-care. Number two, staying connected, reaching out, seeing who you need to connect with. Three, moving your body, you know, every day so you don't get too sedentary. Four, when you also think about just doing one thing to create meaning, take action. And number five, just one thing to delight your spirit.
Uh-huh. I like that last one. I like that last one a lot. And also, I just for those listening, Shaila has a great article that she wrote, and it has some tips for creating a sense of calm during times of anxiety. And we do have a link on that on our program note. So you just go to WPR/Larry and look for today's show. And when you open it up, you'll see a link there to that article. Lots of great information there, as usual. And Shaila, thank you so much for being with us again today.
It's been an honor. Yeah, and want to wish you and all the listeners to stay safe and be well.
And to you also. We've been talking about taking care of our mental health with Shaila Morgain. She is a distinguished psychologist in the Department of Orthopedics and Rehabilitation at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. That's the School of Medicine and Public Health. Stay with us. Our next guest can help you trace your ancestry. Another great way to deal with stress when we're being at home all the time. That's next on the Ideas Network.